What's up, Dustin?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
Good. Looks like you went the first two on. What's up, Josh?
Hey, good morning.
How you doing, buddy?
Good.
So Ashley's joining us today, but she won't be able to converse with us. She's on her phone on mute.
Okay.
It's grateful to have her on. Just wait a minute. Have you guys picked up the Catherine Ponder book?
I haven't yet. My intentions were to buy it that day, and I
forgot.
Yeah. So I was going to go to Barnes and Noble, and I forgot. And then I was going to order it online, and I just remembered it yesterday as I was going through stuff, and so. I'll find time today or tomorrow to go.
Are you anti-Amazon? I know a lot of people are trying to avoid Amazon.
No, not at all. No. Figured if I can find it at Barnes & Noble, I'll just have it in hand right away.
I didn't know anybody still went to Barnes & Noble.
Well, at least they have one in their they have one in their town.
That's true. We don't have one. That's why we don't go to it.
Right.
Hey Corey, did your link end up working, or did you have to use the one I just emailed you?
I used the one you emailed me. I have like a reoccurring deal on my calendars, and when I click on it, like it just doesn't do anything. I think it's my iPad.
Oh, sure.
I don't think it's the link.
You didn't get the email for this week though.
Mm-mm.
That's weird.
By the way, the link is the same every time.
Yeah.
Doesn't change. All right, so let's get rolling. Want to take a quick second and go through, let me see here, the takeaways from last week real quickly. Talked about investing time in yourself as the greatest act of self-love. Your morning routine, working on your success habits, reading, things like that. Just mentioned about the dynamic laws of prosperity. And at least reading one a day. And my intention is to kind of review one a week briefly. And if you guys want to chat or talk about them further, because again, like I said, it's hard to be, it actually, it's impossible to find abundance in your life if you have a scarcity mindset. And so that's why I love this book so much. And to piggyback off that, right? Everyone has a belief system about money, identifying what yours is. And so at least when you start reading the book, you come from a standpoint, okay, what is your current understanding and belief about money? So as you read the book, you know where your starting point is. We reviewed the day three financial consult. Knowing your numbers and also becoming a great salesperson requires to know the prosperity mindset. So, commit yourself, spending a little bit of time each day, each week on reviewing and going through the dynamic laws of prosperity. So for those of you who just joined, Have you guys been able to get the book yet? The Dynamic Laws of Prosperity? Corey, you have? Good. Dino, excellent. Britt? Not yet? Okay. Jared?
I have not yet.
Okay. So let's really make a commitment to get that this week and start reading, because I do want to go through this together. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to begin to shift your mindset to understand how you attract abundance and prosperity into your life starts with a mindset. And if you don't know what that mindset looks like, right, it's random. So we want to take as much randomness out of this process as possible and have it really based on some found principles, sound fundamentals. And I want to review those together and talk about them, because each and every one of you are dealing with your own, I don't want to say hangups, but your own belief system as it comes to money and prosperity. So and we want this to be your most profitable year yet, and this is a great way to do so. So Dr. Eddie, you want to roll from there?
Yeah. Are you going to finish the list, or are you going to stop there?
I just kind of went over the ones I thought that were really important.
Okay. Kind of revert back, since we got a couple extra people now. Excuse me. The financial counsel, I know some of you guys aren't doing them. Some of you guys are doing them personally. Have you seen any different success? Have you altered how you write them? Have you sold any over the last 2 weeks? Was there any obstacles whenever you were presenting them? I kind of just want to open the floor for that first, because we got a lot to dig into today when it comes to patient retention, a lot of cool stuff we're going to go through. But we want to make sure we kind of double back and make sure we're not missing the boat on anything either. So feel free to jump in.
I would say since we started doing it, have had success. We've moved it, our office. I've tried to get them to go to a day three, and have our insurance gal who does all the preparation of the financials do it, but she's just going to do it right at the end of our second visit. And so I signed two people up right away with it, last week. And I think I have to find out this week if that one person paid in full, but it would have been for me, a $4,500 plan, which would have been spot on, which was awesome right away. And then a couple other people too. So, I mean, I've had 4 out of 6 people sign up in the last 2 weeks. It's been pretty
awesome, man.
I don't want to say it's been like super smooth, but it's been real smooth.
Josh, man,
it's never going to be perfect. I mean, eventually it will be at some point, like where it's kind of just second nature, but man, I'm so pumped up to hear that. That is awesome, dude. Congrats, man.
Yeah. Thanks.
Dude, that gave me goosebumps.
Me too.
It really did. It gave me goosebumps, because it is incredible when you eliminate that huge barrier, but to be able to present a $4,500 plan speaks volumes about your certainty, right? About the service you deliver, about the value that you create, and, also understanding, what the patient needs and really selling them what they need, right?
Yeah.
Give them what they want, but sell them what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So when Dr. Josh mentioned $4,500 plan, how many raised an eyebrow? I was like, holy shit, that's a big plan. Yeah, right? So everybody give a thumbs up to Josh. It's freaking awesome. And anybody can do it. Josh, in the past, how difficult, could you even ever have imagined selling a plan like that?
No, I needed to take smaller wins before I got to this one. Yeah, it was, when I looked at a $4,500 plan, I was like, that's going to be tough for me to sell.
Yeah, you're right. And boy, what a great point you bring up. Take it in small chunks first.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's those small little victories that begin to build our achievement muscle that goes, well, if I can do a 2,000, probably could sell 2,500. If I can do 2,500, I'd probably sell 3,000. And I'm not saying to undersell the patient. I'm just saying,
right.
As you begin to own these dynamic laws of prosperity, which is essentially what you're doing, You know, money doesn't become an issue. You just sell them what they need.
And your confidence is going to come through. If you sit in that chair and you don't think you're going to be able to sell a $4,500 care plan, guess what's going to happen?
Right.
You're not going to sell a $4,500 care plan. So I'm just, and you know, all you guys, just chunk it down. Even if you just get them started and you get them through the first two re-exams, and then you have to resell, which is, I'm going to go through why we really shouldn't do that, but at least it gets the ball rolling and it gets them committed and we start reaching goals. And we have that extra time to educate too about what we're doing, why we're doing it. So, I mean, that's, dude, I'm so pumped for you, man. I'm so pumped for you right now.
You know, for me, when I got to it, to be honest with you, the hardest part wasn't, it wasn't selling and saying, look, the cost is going to be $4,500. In my mind, from the first visit to where we were on day two, I had already sold them on the communication of day one to get them to understand from their why.
Yes, that's awesome.
Like when you can take two grown men and get them to a point of where they are like, look, man, I can't go on. I'm realizing that, it's affecting my marriage more than I thought it was, or I can't actually do the things I want to do with my kids. And they're telling me that, and they're to that point where like, look, I'm going to do anything, whatever it takes. I right then and there, I knew that, okay, I don't need to give them the smaller plan. I'm giving them, again, I'm selling them on the potential of what it is that they need, just like you said. So that's what I gave them, and they were totally fine with it.
Great work.
They're like, yeah, that looks perfect. And in fact, it wasn't even the initial part of the 24 visits, because they were like, I'm all in. I'll do, you know, I'm in for the big part of it, right? So.
And this is such a great point, too, doubling back from where we went through this. Over and over, we've been going through this stuff. If you do a really good job on day one, day two, day three is already taken care of. They just want to know where to sign. Mm-hmm. So man, that's just such a bang up job already. I'm so happy. That's why we started doing this, right? That's cool, man. That's a game changer, buddy. And now it's just going to build momentum. So just imagine this is January, dude. Just imagine what it's going to snowball into now that you got this thing rolling and you're just going to crush, man. Cool. Right. Good work.
Dr. Eddie brought up a really good point, is the day three occurs because of day one and day two. So Josh, you work the system, you work the process, you help them identify the real important leverage impact points in their life. You didn't do that, there's no way you're selling that plan on day three.
Right.
Right. Right. So that's why, you know, mastering day one and day two is essential to being effective in the actual sales process, not the mindset, the process. So just
think, man, too, how many referrals are going to get off those patients now? Because now they're going to stick, they're going to get better, they're going to see the result, and they're going to tell every freaking body how great a doctor you are. Mm-hmm. And that's just going to lead to more prosperity and more service. And man, that's awesome, man.
Right.
That is so awesome.
So I want to acknowledge today, we got everyone on today for the first time, I think maybe the second time. So good to see everybody. Good morning. Great to see you. And then Eddie, I want to double back. Can you explain to the group? Now, before I ask the question, you could be successful selling plans on the end of day two. You could be successful selling at any time where you feel like it'll work. Eddie, explain why day three is optimal.
Well, it's in the material, but we'll touch it right now if you want. This patient, most of them, they're running a rat race. They're going 400 miles an hour all day, every day. They got this little pain, this little problem, this little symptom. So it's a setback, right? So they're thinking they're coming in for one or two visits. They're going to get better. Day two, you're overwhelming them. It's like system overload. You're going through x-rays. You're going through whatever else your exam procedures are. These people are mind blown if you're doing this right. They're like, holy fuck. I didn't realize it was that bad, or some of them start crying. I'm sure you all had these experiences. After you go through that emotional state, then you slap the paper on. They don't even know what they're buying right now. Right? So I think there's a little, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I just feel like it's a lot better in my experience, because I used to do day two too, is you get them to day three, and in between day two and day three, have them watch like a new patient presentation or whatever you're doing. So now they get that extra layer and they've had time to let it marinate and they understand exactly what they're getting into when you plop that paper down. it's just a little bit system overload sometimes. That's fine. And we don't want to do that to the patient, because what I found was when I started, I did that the first year, man, I did it day two every time. And the drop off was a little steeper than obviously we want it to be. And I think there was just that disconnect of overwhelm that we kind of gave too much too quickly. And they were just, you know, so I think that that's going to be the better. And we're going to get into really big details of this stuff in a minute or in a couple minutes. Why I find it better on day three. Is that a good enough synopsis?
Yeah. And the other thing too, doing a day three as opposed to a day two, there's less buyer's remorse. There's less buyer's remorse. So as Eddie was mentioning, and he's 100% correct, think about that whole day two process. It's a lot, right? I mean, next to your consult, it's the second most important day they're ever going to have in your practice. They're being blown away by the information you're providing them. Blown away. They're setting goals for their health. Blown away about their visualizing their future, right? So it's a lot. And even though they may be enthusiastic and want to get started, I found the same thing, is that there's less buyer's remorse. People go, you know what? I'm not sure if I can do that. So it gives them time. But
and one more thing too, it's another opportunity. If they didn't bring their spouse or significant other or partner, this is another time for you to make sure that happens, because you don't, without asking, and you should ask, who makes the financial decisions in your household. It's another time to get that other person in their room with you so they understand what's going on. Number one, it's going to hold the other, if they don't both get under care, it's going to hold the one that's under care more accountable. Now they have two eyes or two sets of eyes on them. So us and their spouse or significant other or whatnot, partner, I don't know what the right word is for that these days, but so it gives you another time to educate another person too, and to make sure that there's no, oh, I got to go home and talk with my wife, or I got to go home and talk with my husband, or, you know, whatever that may look like. So it just kind of eliminates that barrier to action as well.
I have a quick question, and this might be maybe just like a you and I time, but one of the reasons my office staff, I think, has wanted to move to a day two or do it after is because they feel that the patient, like, once they see on day three what they owe for day first and second visit and the third visit, if they don't sign up, that their issue and hang up is it like, well, they might already be in shock by seeing what they owe for day two, one, you know, days one through three. How do I change that on them?
Yeah, I mean, that's a legitimate thought on their part. So you should be collecting on day one and day two, right? A majority of people have some sort of deductible,
right,
copay, whatever the case may be. So it's about scripting, Josh.
Okay.
The scripting that I would suggest is when a patient checks out at the end of day one or day two, you do like you would normally do. Hey, Mrs. Jones, looks like the doctor did an exam, an x-rays today, right? So the exam is X, the x-rays are X. Mm-hmm. Your fee for today is $225. Would you prefer to pay cash, check, or charge? Okay. So we want to develop the mindset right from the get-go that they have a financial responsibility that they need to take care of right from the start. Now their patient's response may be, well, I'd like to see what my insurance covers, right? This is why having a verification completed before day one is essential. And that's done, right?
Right.
On the pre-booking call. So when a patient calls to schedule their appointment, you get their insurance. If they're filing insurance, you get their insurance information and number if possible. And if not, have them call you back with that and let them know as a courtesy, we will do an insurance verification to let you know what your benefits are. So okay, when they're in on day one and they check out on day one, and if they say, I want to see what my insurance covers, looks like our staff did a verification. Looks like you have a $5,000 deductible. Do you know if you have met that? Okay. They'll say yes or no. And likely if they say or no or not all of it, then the response is, what would you be willing to pay today? Would you be willing to put half down? Right. We want them to pay something. We want to get right from the get-go, get them in the habit that they have a financial responsibility here. And the same thing goes with day two. Now, when you put their plan together, you can take the remaining balance from day one or two and include that in their plan.
Okay.
That's the way you work around that.
I always do that. Or you can use that payment and put into the, if they're going to do a monthly, which I try to avoid at all costs. But if some people just need to do that, you roll it off that initial down payment if you're doing one. So they're never, they're actually really grateful that happened at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
You know, Eddie talked about payment options. We didn't cover those. We can do those. There's lots of different ways to set it up. But I am a fan of monthly payments. And the reason is because everybody pays monthly for their car payment, their mortgage payment, their insurance payments, their internet bill, anything they can think of. And most of it's on auto debit. They've already been conditioned and trained from a budgetary standpoint to set up monthly payments. Now, if you can get them to pay in full and incentivize them to do so, that's certainly a great thing to do. But doing monthly payments does a couple of things. A, it makes it a lot easier for them to manage from a budgetary standpoint, number one. Number two, it's a very consistent cash flow for the practice. You can be more predictable in your cash flow based on if you had 70% of your patient based on a payment plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's why I like monthly. Hey, who doesn't want to get paid up front? I'm all for that. But let's face it, maybe 20% of your patients can afford to do that.
Right.
Especially when you're selling big plans like Josh.
Yeah. Big baller over there.
So, a couple questions. Are you guys interested? Do you want to do some role playing on day three, number one? Number two, do you want us to go over financial plans? In other words, like payment options, do you want us to cover that? Or do you just want to roll with what you've got set up in your practices? So what's your thought? What's your feedback?
I'd like to learn more about your guys' day three to make that even easier.
Okay.
Because I may be the one having to do it, as our insurance gal is actually going to retire this year. So if I want to be able to teach it properly how I want it done, I need to know how you're doing it. So
okay. I still prefer to do it myself. We've done it both ways. I just know that, I don't know. This is me, I guess, being a control freak, but I know that if I'm in the room, then we're going to handle objections and we're going to get her done and move on with life. So I don't know if she is retiring, if you want to relinquish that duty, if you just, you know, but if you're getting good at it, like it sounds like you are, might not be a bad thing to keep rolling it, you know?
Yeah.
What is everybody else? Is everybody else on the same board with that, where you want to go through day three again? Yeah.
That's the financials?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we don't do that, so.
Okay.
But I guess we'll listen.
Well, maybe in the future, though. So yeah. If you learn it now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes we do have to help Nicole, so.
Yeah. And honestly, that's a great point, Brittany. God, you know, what if Nicole got sick and she couldn't be there for a week or two? Who's going to present those plans? Right? So there always should be backup systems in your practice for contingencies. Or she's on vacation, right? And you had four new patients last week. And you can't wait until she comes back a week from now, which is now 2 weeks. So it would be good for us to come. So we'll do some role playing. We'll go over the payment option. We won't do it today because we have a plan. We're going to get into some of the retention stuff because you guys have been chomping at the bit for that. But we'll visit back on this. Fair enough?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you want to segue, we're doing role play financials, or we're going to go into patient retention? You just confused the heck
out
of
me. No, we're going to go into retention. We'll cover that. We'll go back into that next week.
Okay. Yeah, I'm about to say, I spent like 3 hours putting this together. We better do some of this.
Yeah, go for it.
All right. So I'm going to, patient retention is a biggie, man. If you build a strong foundational base of a great practice that people are coming in consistently, this is going to make your life so much easier and more enjoyable. So I took this quote here. I love it. It's not really a quote. It's just more of like a synopsis, right? So this is why patient retention most times fails for people. So there's a popular notion that educating patients means taking a deep breath and filling the air with some well-chosen words. This does little educating because if you're talking, you're teaching. Acknowledging this distinction could change your strategy, even your results. So teaching is mostly benefits the teacher who must generate and deliver the information. Teaching concerns itself with presenting data, short-term memorization, and is characterized by students who, if given the chance, would prefer not to participate. Educating is a partnership in which the student is actively seeking information and new insights. The student is curious and finds the material relevant and meaningful. Education is interactive and often directed by the student. Well, many chiropractors teach because students, the patients, don't seem particularly interested, probably because there isn't a test to pass. Instead, engage the patients by asking questions, seek to understand, learn how they see their body, perceive their symptoms, and your intervention. I thought this was pretty neat. It's funny that everything kind of happens as it should in life, right? So as I was putting this stuff together, this quote got emailed to my phone, and I was like, oh, I gotta use that stuff. Because how many times do you get in a room and you're just spewing hot air at a patient, and hopefully it makes you feel better anyway, right? But you never really start asking the questions or get the patient engaged in this conversation. So it's a one-way street, and that information that you're doing, we've all been in class, it just whoosh, because we're not actually interpreting the data or the information. But whenever we ask a question and let them lead us into what they want to say, and if they don't, I want you to have a plan B, obviously, of something we're going to talk about, not the weather. But more times than not, if you ask the right questions, those patients are going to open this door up for you to just fill them up. And then you fill them up on what they want to learn, or maybe it's nutrition today, or maybe it's exercise today, maybe it's chiropractic philosophy today, whatever it is, then you're going to just steamroll through them, and they're going to get the big idea up here, and they're going to stick around longer for care. Right? This makes so much sense to me. Is everybody cool with that? Okay. I just want to start with that. So let's go through the patient retention. I love this stuff.
Eddie, before you go on, we've discussed this and I've reiterated this and I'll do it again here. The quality of practice is directly related to the quality of the questions you ask. The quality of relationships you create are directly related to the quality of the questions that you ask. So just think about the day one, day two process. How many questions are in that scripting to invoke an emotion, to invoke a thought, to evoke a feeling, to create a shift? That's why asking questions, the Socratic method of education, is far more powerful because it requires patient engagement. They're part of the education process as opposed to a monologue where we talk at people, telling them what we think they want to know or we think is important they should know, rather than getting to the core essence of what's important to them. When I learned that, guys, it was a tremendous shift in my life and my business.
I want to challenge you this week, though. Write down one question that if a patient doesn't bring something up to you in the room, that you're going to ask the patient. I'm going to give you a couple ideas because I do this myself. Miss Jones, why is it important to get your spine checked and properly aligned regularly? Great conversation starter, because Lord knows you may be the best educator in the world, because I think I'm pretty good. Some of the responses you're going to get are going to blow you away. But then it's a great time to kind of recapture and reteach. Re-educate, we should say, in this case, right? In New Year's, what's the big goal you set for your health this year? How are you going to go about getting that accomplished? What have you started doing already? You know, so you kind of can start this drip effect, but then if they don't always have something, because they're not always going to have something to ask, especially if they've been with you for a while, and sometimes they're too scared to ask when they first start, but it kind of gives you a starting place. That you know that it gets them kind of emotional, and you get into their life and their overall health. So they know now what we do, why we do it, But more importantly, we can help with other things too. We can talk about your exercise program. We can talk about diet, nutrition. We can talk about your stretching. We can talk about some mental things, you know, affirmation, gratitude, some things that could keep us clear and level-headed and reduce anxiety and depression. I mean, so it's limitless. You kind of come up with your own questions that you feel comfortable with, that you're maybe an expert in that field. And then you can open the door up whenever you get in the room and there's those crickets, or you want to start talking about the weather, you want to start talking about the Packers, or, you know, whatever that is, because that's not really serving the patient as much as it is serving you. Dr. J, you want to add anything?
Yeah, no, I just think it's mind blowing when you ask that question. Josh, why are you coming here? It's really uncomfortable for you, right? Because you're going to hear like, I like, and the thing is, guys, if you don't address this, this is one of the keys to retention. You have to continually remind them why they're here, what they're working towards, because the education doesn't stop at day two. It's only just the start. So another question I usually like to ask them, you know, this, you know, do you ever wonder why I became a chiropractor and not a medical doctor?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Right? And that gives me an opportunity to tell my story. And each one of you have a story, which is wonderful, because it deepens the relationship when they know more about you. And for some of you who have children, it's another great one. Do you know why I adjust my, you know what, you know why I adjust my children? Or do you know when I gave my children their first adjustment? It's a great way to invoke referrals for kids. Or do you know why I adjust my kids? You know, and Dr. Eddie's right. One question a week. People used to ask me, hey, do you have a patient care curriculum? And for those who don't know, it's like a script for every visit, one through whatever, what to say, what to talk about. Like, I don't operate that way. No way. I want it to be authentic and real. But having a question in preparation is one of the greatest retention tools you can do, is by engaging the patient and pulling things out of them and having them understand and reveal some things that perhaps they didn't know before or forgot.
And it's actually a lot of fun, especially with the COVID thing. One of the questions, I've actually been back to this question, I don't even know how many times at this point. Some people are probably sick of me asking it, but, you know, Ms. Jones, these viruses, you know, we come in contact with 5 different viruses every day. What are you doing to safeguard your health, so when you do come in contact with a virus, that your body's able to defend against it? And they're like, I don't know. What should I be doing? And it's an easy segue into nutrition, lifestyle, whatever you want to hit on that day. But it's a really good one. And it's a really, everybody's talking about it. Whenever you go with your friends and family, do you ever go not say COVID? Somebody's going to say it at some point, right? So it's a really hot topic. So it's a good one to ride right now too. But just write one for the next 4 weeks at least, and start really using this, and you're going to have a lot of fun with it.
All right, so I got a challenge for you all. Next week, I want you to all bring one question that we can share. Okay? One question that we can share amongst us. That'll be 9 questions you'll have for 9 weeks. Fair enough? Everyone good with that? So bring
can't
one
use mine, question. I already used it.
Yeah, you can't use the ones we used.
Cool. All right, so let's go a little bit deeper into retention. That's an easy place to start though. So there's 10 reasons patients are gonna leave your office in the first week after their pain is gone, in the middle of their corrective program, or quitting anytime before maintenance care for that matter, right? Every practice have patients that do commit and follow through with care. What I've found, and I know Dr. J is the same, there's this like 80-20 rule, right? That's how we live our life in nutrition in my house. 80% of the time we're crushing it, 20% of the time we're gonna do whatever we want. There's an 80-20% rule in practice too, I'm starting to find, right? 20% of the patients that you'll get will do anything you say and are gonna be committed because you told them to, right? The 80% though, we really got to work at those guys. So if we really want to have a patient retention based practice where we're not having to depend on all these 20, 50 new patients a month to keep everything rolling. So what I want you to start thinking about is who are the ones that are listening to everything I'm saying? Who are the ones going to need a little extra nudging? Because you know exactly what I'm talking about when that patient gets in that seat, right? Hey, doc, I'm going to be here for three visits and I'll see you when I hurt again. Or, yeah, I hadn't been to the chiropractor in 10 years because last time I didn't do anything. Like, you know these people, right? So that's whenever you're going to dig your heels in a little bit more and make sure you have that extra little beeline to the finish line with those guys. So what I want you to do is, because knowing not every patient is going to commit to care, we've all had this fall off. We all are going to have it. That's going to be life, right, in practice. What happens to me, and I'm sure it happens to you guys, is you repeatedly are going to ask yourselves over and over, why did that happen? Why did that patient discontinue care? Why did they drop off and visit, whatever? And I want you to do that because it's valuable information to be got there. Because if you're seeing there's patients dropping off at visit 12, we're not really doing a great job with the ROT too. So there is validity to that. But I kind of want you just to use it also to know that, hey, sometimes it's okay that you lost that patient because they'll come back when they're ready. Not everybody's going to get it the first time. We've had those patients that come in four or five times with the same problem and finally that light bulb goes off and they're like, okay, I think I'm ready for that to not happen again. You with me? I see a lot of nodding heads, so all in the same boat there. What could I have done better is a question I always ask myself, especially when I first got out. And I want you to ask these, especially if they're falling off early. If they're falling off before visit 26, you need to be asking yourself regularly, what could I have done better? What didn't they get? And was I teaching or was I educating? And then you're going to see a common thread here, and it's going to show you where each individual, where we need to hunker down and spend our time. The reason I'm starting with this is because, oh my God, I would stay up at night when I first was in practice wondering, oh my God, why didn't Miss Jones come back for whatever visit? What did I do? What did she not get? All of us have struggled with this at some point, right? What I want you not to do is beat yourself up about it, because the great thing about our profession is there's going to be a next one. And so the next time we just got to perform better. So I'm very passionate about the spinal corrective phase of obviously care and chiropractic. And I believe it's our responsibility to keep as many people out of medical offices, off drugs, unsubluxated. So what I want you to do this week is in the first 3 minutes of a patient visit, take that posture, that patient from pain to posture. And we're going to go through this. This is going to be a fun couple of little minutes here, right? So they come in for a pit stop. We talked about this earlier. They're hustling, bustling. They got this low back pain, but they don't really know exactly how deep that issue is, right? So we need to take that pain into a postural problem. You need to bring them into present time when you do that. So you need to say, hey, Ms. Jones, take a deep breath. This is our time to figure out what's going on. Where's the underlying condition here? And what are we going to do to fix it? After we go through that, we need to talk about poor biomechanics of the spine resulting in poor nervous system dysfunction. So what I want you to do is focus on the organs. So they're going to circle. Hopefully your intake sheet has fatigue, asthma, reflux, whatever those things are, right? So now we're going to take this postural problem and we're going to flip it to a organ problem, right? Because they came in for low back pain. They didn't come in for that constipation, right? Or they came in for upper back pain. They didn't come in for that asthma. So they don't really see the correlation here. So this is our job to do this. This is the script that I use, right? So as you go through, so did you know, Ms. Jones, the nerves in the upper mid back supply strength and energy to the heart and lungs? Postural distortions weaken these nerves and can cause asthma sometimes. Did you know that? No. So basically anything that they circle organ-wise, go back to your merit chart. If you don't know your merit chart, get after it. Print it out, carry it with you, put it on your phone so you know exactly where these innervations are going. And I'll send a copy of a merit chart if you don't have one. Exactly where these innervations are going and what are the potential symptoms, organ involvement, they could be experiencing or they are experiencing, and how are we going to correlate those in a room? That makes sense? You see, questions so far? I know I talk fast, but I really am passionate about this stuff. We good? Cool. This is the easy place to start, because now you're already reframing their paradigm to say, hey, I do have upper back pain, but my God, I didn't know asthma could be caused from that, you know? So this is where we're kind of going to go now. So we got the pain problem. So a lot of people are going to say, hey, doc, I'm feeling so much better. You're a miracle worker. You got hands of gold, whatever they say, magic man, they call you, right? Or magic woman, sorry, Brittany and Ashley. So whenever they say stuff like that, what's your response? Hey, doc, you're a miracle worker. I feel better in 3 visits. Give me something.
Look, we're just clearing the interference. Your body's doing what it's exactly designed to do.
Bingo. And then you refer back to that 10% chart, right?
Yeah.
Ms. Jones, I'm so happy to hear we're getting out of 10% of that nervous system function. So now your body's getting out of that acute symptom phase. Now your body can really focus on healing. This is when we make our money, right? So we're going to get this momentum. We're going to ride this momentum until we actually get this problem fixed now. Because if you don't say something, because a lot of people are non-confrontational, and they'll let that ride. But what the patient's already thinking is they're like, oh, I'm good. They'll set another appointment. They'll set 2 more appointments, but they're probably not going to show up. And if they do show up, they're already thinking about how they're going to get out of the next one. So you really got to start reframing where are they at mentally with this stuff when they say stuff like that. And then another easy way to refer back, say, hey, Ms. Jones, you're feeling better in 3 days. Great. Your body's doing that healing. We're just connecting the dots. The cool thing is, how long did we say that problem was there? 10 years. So how long did we say it was going to take for us to structurally get this problem fixed? 12 months. And you're already feeling so much better in 2 weeks. That's awesome. Your body's a little ahead of schedule. Now we're going to keep healing and make sure we get through that 12-month correction. That's what you still want, right? Yes. Fist bump. Get out of the room.
Dr. Eddie.
Yep.
So the question I want to ask to the group is, how do you know if the problem's been there 10 years? I'm not asking you this. I'm asking the group. How does he know to make that generalization? Hey, Bob, do you know your problem's been there roughly 10 years or so? Anybody?
In my opinion, a lot of times those things pop up 10 years later. The body gets to a point where it can't compromise anymore, and then all of a sudden, bam-o. You just can't handle load anymore.
Yep. Yep, that's part of it.
And all of a sudden pain comes in. And then they know it's there.
Luke.
Looking through the films too, degeneration charts and stuff like that.
Yep. Luke.
I would say on average, most people don't address their problems until they've had them for 10 years. And I can't remember where I heard that, but I heard that like last week.
Okay, so 3 great answers. You're 100% correct. You're all 3 of you are right. And this is where the confidence of your clinical skills come into play. For me, there was nothing more simpler than to just look at their films, right? You know that degenerative changes are not going to show up for years. So stage 1 of degeneration, it's going to be at least 3 to 5 years before you're going to start to see some change. What does that mean? It means they've had chronic subluxation that has gone undetected. Guys, you need to own this and write it down. Undetected and therefore uncorrected. Chronic subluxation causes joint dysfunction, which eventually will cause the joint to begin to wear out and degenerate. So any degeneration you see on film is the result of chronic subluxation. So who's better? Let me rephrase that. Is there anyone who's capable of fixing that other than you? You see, when you own that, the level of confidence goes through the roof. Now, if we get to phase 2 degeneration, and I don't know if you guys are taught this, were taught this, or what was taught, I don't know. You know, I was in school way before you guys, but we were always led to understand that stage 2 of DJD is gonna take at least a decade to appear, maybe longer. So that's how you come up with that 10-year kind of frame of mind. And then phase 3, a couple of decades. So when you can make the connection between their phases of degeneration, this is why day 2, when you go over films, is so important, because you're going to reference this ongoing. And you go through that and you show them normal. Then you show them their films and you ask them, Mrs. Jones, based on this chart here, where do you think you're at? And they're pretty good at picking the phase. And then you say to them, Mrs. Jones, did you know that it takes at least 10 years of chronic, undetected, and uncorrected subluxation for that to degenerate to that point? And I would ask them, who do you think is best at correcting that? And they would say, a chiropractor, you. I would say, I agree. In fact, I don't know of anyone else who does. Who else does this work? It's a game changer. So here's what I wrote in our takeaways you guys get this week. The one thing you need to be cautious about when a patient wants to give you the credit for their results. If you accept the credit, you better accept the blame if they don't get results. Fred Barge, one of the great chiropractors, wrote lots of books, said, you give the body the credit for the change. You are the facilitator. That's all you are. Because if they don't get the results, then you have to own the responsibility. Now, sometimes the responsibility falls on us. Maybe we didn't do a good enough job clinically. Maybe we need to improve our adjusting skills. Maybe we missed something on our assessment evaluation. So I'm not saying to not look within and understand how you can be better at delivering what you do. But what I'm saying is when a patient acknowledges the results, give them the credit. Say, look, all we're doing is turning your power back on. We're getting motion back into those joints. We're reconnecting to the brain, to all your organs and tissue. You're doing the healing. God gave you the power to heal within. We're just turning that power back on. Man, it's such an empowering way to practice too, by the way. So don't take the credit unless you're willing to accept the blame. And be confident in your assessment evaluation when you're making those recommendations. Look, you've had unresolved chronic subluxation for 5 years because you're in phase one degeneration, at least, could be longer. And then Dr. Eddie brought up a great point that I referenced back to on day two again. Do you remember when I asked you how long it would take to fix this problem? And you said to me 3 or 4 years, right? Because they think if it's been there 5 years, probably gonna take maybe half as long or 10 years, half as long. Right? No, that's the beauty, right? We can make these changes and corrections neurologically and structurally in a fraction of the time, as long as you stay committed to the plan. So these are the reaffirmations. And you may be saying to yourself, what does this have to do with retention? Retention, guys, is education. Number one, first and foremost. The more you empower them with the right information and ask good questions, the longer they stay. And there's a lot of other skills we're gonna go through as well here too. So education.
That's really all this comes down to is education. I've got all these bullet points, but the whole overwhelming theme here is us being clinically competent and very great. I mean, what's doctor stand for, right? Teacher, we need to be really good at educating our patients on what the hell is happening. Why is your body going through this? Do we ever wanna go back here? And this is how you avoid it. Like, it's all it comes back to. I saw our communication skills just have to continually improve, all of us, every day. So another great thing for patient retention, have your patients set long-term health goals. So as they set long-term goals with you, then they're going to know, hey, this doctor is going to be with me through it all and see me reach those goals, right? Where there is no vision, the people will perish. I cannot remember who said that, but it's a very true story. So they need to have a vision of what's the next 12 months look like? What's the next 2 years look like? What do we look 5 years down the road, right? So if that's playing with their grandkids, if that's going skiing in the winters, whatever that is, it's very imperative we get these things up front. If you haven't done it yet, start tomorrow. Start today if you're in the office. Hey, Ms. Jones, we haven't set any long-term, we got some short-term goals. Haven't heard any of your long-term goals. What you got for me today? And then you write these things down and you can revisit them as you go through your exams and your processes again to make sure that they understand that, hey, this is what we're doing. You feel awesome, but we're trying to get way over here in 2 years, right?
And to help them with that question is always like to coach them through it. Like, sure. What are you looking for? You know, do you want to be able to sleep better? You want more energy? You know, do you want to be able to continue to run? I know you enjoy running, whatever it might be. So coach them through that process, to help them through that process. Josh brought up a good point earlier. He said, you know, he'll ask patients, you know, what's good today? And oftentimes they don't have a response. And my belief system about that is because most people don't think positively. They think in negative conditions. And so therefore, you know, we literally have to help them kind of rewire their brain to think in more empowering terms. So
what do you want to work through? How to set a long-term goal?
What I was mentioning was, is when you ask that question to a patient, a lot of times, like when Josh asks what's good today, they can't even come up with anything because they've never even thought about it. So you coach that, you coach them through it.
Oh yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So all, you know, you are their coach, guys. You're their health coach. You're their mindset coach. That's what you're doing. That's what we do.
Yeah, you better be prepared to do all of it every day, because you never know what's going to walk in that room, right? Or what you're going to walk in that room and see. It's just half the fun of it, right?
Yeah, and guys, this is the importance why you need to be intentional in your practice each day. It's easy to default to low-level conversations, right? There's no confrontation. There's no energy to talk about the weather. There's no energy. There's no confrontation to talk football or whatever the hell is on their mind. But when you choose to be intentional, because if you've got 3 to 5 minutes or 7, however long your treatment process is, make it as impactful as possible, because that's what creates the value and the want and desire for the patient to continue care. If you get trapped in these meaningless conversations, they could have those conversations with whoever throughout the day. What sets you apart? What makes you different? And that's the conversations that you choose to have with them.
If you can't think of anything to talk about or any question to ask, just explain to them what you're finding on your check.
Yes.
Go through your check. Be like, hey, Ms. Jones, we're right short today this amount. As I bring you into flexion, this is what happens. This is what that means. This is what your body's doing. You know, and then you could actually relate back to maybe their job, maybe whatever in their life is actually causing them to subluxate. I mean, it's just an easy conversation starter. If they got an upper cervical way out of whack, Ms. Jones, you been having any headaches lately? This is, you know, just, you can kind of relate it back to what's going on. Then they think you're, you know, even that much better. But again, it's just the merit chart, right? Or finding something they didn't think you were going to find today, or because they don't want to hear that it's going to snow today. They know that shit too, just like we do. They don't care the Packers won. They may be a Bears fan. I mean, you don't know, you know, or a Minnesota fan, like probably Dr. Luke is, right? But anyway, so go through your check. If you can't find anything else to ask, or you're just that busy, just go through your check that day.
Does everyone use a method of analysis before you adjust? In other words, do you have a system to assess and evaluate the patient on what to adjust? Okay, good. So then what you want to do is refer back to your initial evaluation. So Dr. Eddie was referencing the leg check. So when we first checked them on day one, if they're 3/4 of an inch short, and at the end of week 3, they're down when I check them, 1/2 inch. So they went from a +3 to a +2. Celebrate that with them. You know, when I check you now, you're 30%, almost 33% improved where you were when you first began. So what you're doing is you're making them excited because they can't see. And if we don't tell them periodically about the progress they're making objectively, then that's a really important factor. So give them milestones and get them excited about the results you're seeing, and then pre-frame them. Imagine what it's going to be like 3 weeks from now, right? This is what we got in 3 weeks. Imagine what it's going to be like in 3 weeks from now. Another great retention tool.
And I'm just going to give you an idea of these long-term goals, because I don't know if you guys do this or haven't done this, and we're going to start doing this, obviously. The reason we let them set their long-term goals is because now they have 100% commitment to their care. they're committed to care because this is their goal, is their idea, but you helped them kind of reach that aha moment, right? People buy with emotions and justify with facts. So if we get them emotional, we get them wanting to play with their grandkids or play with their kids or have a better marriage or whatever, you know, what that thing is for them, they are going to stick around for care and see this through. I promise you, it never doesn't work. And if it doesn't, it's not usually on your end. It's usually they lost their job, they got divorced, they moved out of town, whatever that thing is. That's going to happen, unfortunately, which is good, you know. I want to travel around the world when I'm 70. What I usually say is like, hey, Miss Jones, we know what we want the next 12 months to look like. Now let's think a little bit far. Let's play bigger. What do you want the next 5 years to look like? What do you want the next 10 years to look? What do you want to be doing? How do you want to be feeling? Who do you want to be doing it with? And then they start thinking about this stuff. They're like, oh, I want to go travel. I had this lady the other day. I want to go travel around the world with my husband when I'm 75. That's an awesome goal. That's a kick-ass goal. Now, what are we going to do to make sure that we're healthy enough to be able to do that? Boom. Right? So whatever their thing is, just make it their idea. Just lead them in with the questions, and then they'll bring you something. I want to ski with my grandkids. I wrote some of the ones I got last week with new patients. I want to be active and athletic for the rest of my life. I want to be healthy and disease free for the rest of my life. I want to live to be a healthy 100 years old. So if somebody says that to you, what would you say? I want to live to be a healthy 100 years old.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. And then what would you say? Heck yeah. Because now you're trying to preframe to know that when they think about living to be 100 and healthy, they think about you having to be on their team for that to happen, right? So then I would say, well, what's your plan on getting to a healthy 100 years old? And then this opens up a different conversation, right? So then this goes into, you know, chiropractic care, obviously, maintaining the structure integrity, the spinal biomechanics. Then we talk about nutrition, like, so you can really start to take, like we always talk with you guys, was taking these big goals and kind of chunking them down to what needs to happen to make them reality. And this is a great, 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 great way for you to connect with the patient even deeper, number one. But then obviously for the patient to be able to understand what this long-term journey looks like. So Dr. Want to add, Dr. J, before we move on?
Yeah, so with the last few minutes we have today, I want to go around the room and I want to ask each one of you. The question is, what are you going to do differently this week based on the things that we covered to engage the patient more to help build your retention? So let's start with Dustin because his mic is open.
Corey looks like he's sleeping over there.
No, not at all.
No, he said, Corey, you're awake. You're good.
Yes, I saw your eyes.
Go ahead, man. Dustin,
go ahead, bro.
I'm gonna do the long-term goal thing. I think in the report of findings, especially, I mean, obviously we focus on the phase one, phase two, but I think just putting that in their mind even right away to look to the long-term, I think will really help.
Yeah, I'm gonna encourage you, when they tell you that long-term goal, write it down. Put it in your soap note, whatever you need to do. It's something that's gonna pop up every time they come in. And so you don't talk about it every time, but every once in a while, maybe every fourth visit or whatever you choose to do, or if you don't have something to talk about that day, this is what you talk about, right?
Definitely.
Dr. Luke.
I'm going to go with the question of the day stuff. So I've actually been thinking about that more lately.
Come up with one yet?
I mean, I love asking people what they think is going on, or like having them explain the process of what we're working on. That's like my default. But I want to come up with more creative ones. So
cool. Remember, everyone's got to bring one next week, and then we're starting off with that. So, Dr. Jared.
In this conversation, stop asking everyone what they think of the Packers winning this weekend and what they're going to do next weekend.
So. I knew it was you. I hear you down the hallway doing that.
and Jared, I'm not picking on you for you per se, but we've all done it, and I'm just being honest with you. It's lazy.
Yep.
It's lazy, and it's not what they're paying you for. And you're undermining your own success by doing that. It's okay to acknowledge it. Hey, man, what about those Packers? And then get into it, right? Okay.
If there's patients you've been taking care of for years, 5-6 years, you're going to have some kind of personal conversation. Don't get it twisted. But if it's somebody you've been seeing for less than a year, we don't need to waste a whole lot of time on that stuff. But I mean, you know, but anybody else, I mean, I'm sure Dr. J, after you're seeing people for 10 years, hey, how's your family doing? How's, you know, this doing? How's your mom doing? You know, whatever it is. So it's not completely out of the question, just time frame wise, you know?
Yeah, I saw people from day one till I left in 25 years, but I always left them with something about them and their health, always. Okay. Dr. Josh.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to their key things of why they started, what they wanted corrected, their reason for starting care, and start connecting that with what are they looking for. Again, re-engage them in their 12 months, 2 years, and 5 years, and what they're looking for, and let them know that, look, I want to be here with you through that time and longer. And not only that, the rest of your family.
Yeah.
So start asking them why their family isn't in here as well.
And don't be afraid, guys, to say, you know, we want to be your office. We want to be your health coach. We want to be your health advocate. We want to be there for you and your family every step of the way. Because a lot of them don't know you have a nutritional or exercise or mindset or whatever it might be. So you have to tell them. Dr. Brittany.
Same thing, kind of like what everybody else said, just more meaningful conversations, more educational conversations. There you go.
Yeah. So think of it in this terms, guys, intentional. Be intentional when you practice. What are you trying to do for these people? What are they there, especially when they sign a $4,500 plan, right? Not that you're going to treat them any better than the somebody who's just paying fee for service, but they're there giving you value. You better sure as ass know you got to give them value back. Corey.
Oh, well, I haven't heard any talk about the Chiefs this morning. It's all Packers, but my list, I have a list of daily questions. Well, not daily, but like at certain visits along the way during, you know, like your first 12 to 24 that I typically will, you know, go over with each patient. So I have quite a few patients that it's like trying to pull teeth to even get them to talk. So having those questions ready is super beneficial. So if I just really continue.
Introverted people though, this might be a time where you revert back to finding what you, are you telling what you're finding? And yeah. Whether you do MOPAL or whatever you do as far as your daily check to before you adjust, just, so I got a few of those right now that they just don't want to talk. They don't, so it's fine. And actually, I don't even mind it.
So it's you awkward. Go through and you say,
hey, this is what I'm finding today. You know, whatever that is, and just snowball on that, get them out of the room and keep moving. But I used to pull my hair out with those people. That's why I want to take a minute for this. Those people used to drive me insane. Like, you got to have something here. You got to be thinking about something. And some people just, that's just how they process, is more internal. So,
yeah.
But they are listening. So it doesn't mean don't try.
Sure.
It doesn't mean don't drop a pearl of wisdom on them, right? It doesn't mean, you know, they don't want to talk. No, they may not be one to initiate, but they're there for a reason. So I know Dr. Ashley can't communicate. I don't know if Dr. Dino can drop in. I know he's traveling on a way to work, but I don't know if he can do so.
Hey, I'm at a stoplight.
Right, man, good.
Yeah, I would say kind of the same thing along the lines of just more education-wise. Thank you very much. Just getting the patient just to realize a little bit more of how important their spine is to everyday life.
Connecting their problem to their structure and their structure to their visceral.
Exactly.
And if you can continue to close that loop, holy shit, that's a major paradigm shift, right?
Try that this week. Organ to nerve function, asthma, fatigue, whatever that thing is, really try to work on that. And those people are going to be mind blown. It's going to change their whole outlook about what you're doing there.
Yeah. I mean, if you got a patient with low back issues, right? Everyone's sitting far too much now. It's just our lifestyle. Connect their sitting to their low back issues to their digestive issues. right? They're digestive issues to L, whatever it's L1, T12, L5, right?
Yeah.
Make that link.
The upper GI tract controlled by T1 and T3, if anybody was wondering. So that's always a big epiphany for people. I'm having some upper GI stuff, whatever that looks like. Oh, well, Ms. Jones, you know that's coming from this area? Those are those nerves innervate. Pretty crazy, right?
So Dr. Eddie, can you attach the Merrick chart to the...
Yeah, I already pulled it out. Yeah, I got it ready.
All right, cool. All right, guys. Great stuff today. As always, thanks for participating. Thanks for being on. We are your advocates, just like you are your patient advocates. Our sole focus is to make sure that you're successful. We're going to do everything we can, give you everything that we know that we've learned. All you need to do is just apply. That's all you need to do, and we'll be here to support you. If you need us, reach out to us. Questions, reach out to us. You need to call, reach out to us. Otherwise, we're scheduled for February 2nd, Tuesday, February 2nd.
Keep crushing it, guys.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Be well, everybody.
Guys, have a good week.
You too.